Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the first part of the 13th season of Doctor Who. I think they called this Doctor Who Flux. Jodie Whittaker is the Doctor, and we've got Yaz returning as a companion. We get a new companion, Dan. And they did a six-part story for this, which is really one of the longer stories they've told in kind of the modern Doctor Who era. I think the only times they've gone this long or longer was over in Torchwood. And it had pros, it had cons. There were parts of it. I mean, overall, it was fun to watch.
It came together in the end. And I will give them credit for they managed to pull things together by the end.
They pulled it together, but they had so many threads to pull together that I don't think most of them got the satisfying payoff that I would have liked.
In the beginning, in that first episode, for me, and part of it is my brain was not 100% online, and I will own that, but it was all over the place for me.
Well, even regardless of how together you felt you were or whatever, it reminded me of the first half, the first season of Heroes, where they introduce plot after plot after plot, and you're like, that's great, but what does this have to do with any of the other stuff?
Well, and in the case of Heroes, where it was, and the characters still haven't met.
Yeah.
You know, and we actually went back and rewatched one section at the end of
the tail end of the first episode, yeah.
Because I had pointed out to you after we had watched it that they'd done the equivalent of a montage that was just a boom, don't forget we're following this, boom, don't forget we're following this, boom, boom, boom.
Well, and all of that in like the 30 seconds or so before the end credits.
And I had counted at the time seven plot lines. And when we went back and rewatched it, it was actually nine, technically, if you counted the Doctor as being separate.
Well, you have to, because it was going to, you know, the Centaurans. It was going to, was it the Daleks even at that point?
No, not the Daleks yet.
Yeah, they hadn't even introduced everybody yet.
Yeah.
But at that point, they had the guy from the 1820s. You know, they had
Claire.
They had the guy in space, Zavinder or whatever. And it just went, it just kept going. And it's like, okay, they've got all of these other things. They've got the Weeping Angels. We've got this. We've got that.
We had the Weeping Angels, which brought with them Claire, who we'd met Claire briefly with kind of a, oh yeah, I've met you, but you haven't met me with the Doctor, which was kind of fun.
But reminiscent of Blink, which introduced the Weeping Angels.
We had both Dan and his girlfriend, which, well, pseudo-girlfriend, but they were on separate journeys, which was kind of interesting. Vendor, who I never figured out what time frame he was from.
Well, it had to be present day.
Did it?
There was no sense, well, I was going to say, there was no sense that he had traveled in time.
But we met him at Atropos when we physically met him, which is a place that Yaz traveled to. And Atropos is the center of time, the keeper of time.
I think it could be read either way legitimately.
So it just, yeah, that was my problem. Most likely he didn't travel through time because Bell didn't seem to have traveled through time.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going with.
But it just, it wasn't clear to me. If he hadn't traveled, then where was he from? Because he sure seemed human, but
the bigger question is, let's say he's a human in an alien civilization, whatever. He encounters the Grand Serpent, who then makes his way to Earth retroactively. I mean, the Grand Serpent had to time travel.
Yeah.
Or be living in, you know, across the galaxy simultaneously or something. His timeline never made sense.
Or as one person put it, the Grand Serpent seemed to drop in on Earth for a week here, a week there, but not actually be progressively living through time on Earth, if that made sense.
Well, it seemed like he had gone back in time and placing himself in key moments.
Yeah.
Which implies time travel that we never see, Or he was doing that in multiple locales across the galaxies simultaneously, which implies almost instantaneous, you know, intergalactic travel or something. Either way, it was kind of weird.
Yeah. And we still haven't even hit on what I nicknamed the evil siblings.
Yeah, the big bads for the arc.
Yeah.
And I never really got clarity on, I mean, we get aspects of their backstory, but I never understood their motivation other than, well, why wouldn't we?
Yeah, pretty much. You imprisoned us, therefore we're going to destroy the entire universe you and we live in.
And this whole thing, what were the other plot lines before we get off of that?
I think that did it. I'll run down the list real fast, and you make sure I did. So we had Dan, who also had the pseudo-girlfriend Diana. We had Claire, who brought with her the Weeping Angels, and then an episode or two, or more later, but she brought in Jericho, who may be one of my favorite characters.
He was good.
Yeah. Of this arc. We had the 1820s Tunnel Man Williamson, who they brought in the first episode, and mm-hmm. honestly, I think they brought in too soon.
Yeah, yeah.
The Centaurans, Carvanista, who was the Lupari, and through him they brought in more Lupari, really.
Well, they mentioned Lupari. I don't know that we really ever saw other Lupari.
True. He gives commands to other off-screen yeah. Lupari. True. Vendor, who in the first episode, he's just kind of ejecting from a one-man outpost.
Mm-hmm.
And later we get more on his civilization, and through him we get Bell later, and then the evil siblings, who I was never clear on their names, but I think they were Azure and Swarm. And through them, we get these beings that seem to be called the Passengers.
Yeah. And we've seen concepts like them before, where it's something that can contain the better part of a civilization or something.
Yeah.
So that felt reminiscent to some stuff we'd seen previously in Doctor Who.
Though this felt more destructive, where in the past I thought it was more in a preservation type fashion.
I think the intent was preservation, but it was being weaponized.
Okay.
With Belle, she was definitely part of Vinder's storyline, but the entire first episode we see her, I mean, it becomes increasingly clear that's probably who she's looking for.
We had no context for so long with her.
Well, and the problem was, she's introduced as the narrating character of that episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the actress did a wonderful job. And it's funny because I think plot-wise, while everything kind of eventually hooks together and stuff, the plot was the weakness of the arc.
We were given no reason to care about her when we first met her. It was like we were meeting someone who was on, I know not what planet, simply having to live with and survive the flux and what was going on. And it was like, we just wanted to give you someone else's perspective. And we'll mention two or three episodes later that, oh, by the way, she is tied into the main character.
Right. But she's running around on a planet, and then suddenly she's in a spaceship running around the galaxy. It was unclear to me the scope of her existence, and I liked the idea of what they were doing. I think the execution fell flat.
We got a line that she borrowed the ship,
because
she didn't want to say she stole it. And we got a line that she was serving in the same whatever military force or whatever that Vendor was in.
Yeah, it just going from she's hiding around on a planet to she gets a spaceship off screen and is darting around the galaxy.
For some reason, she felt, well, that is actually one key to where they were from. They were from the Dalek sector.
And yeah, but at one point she was mentioning the, well, I interpreted that at the time, since it was all planet bound and she hadn't left the planet, is it was the Dalek sector of the planet.
That's what I had thought at the time, too.
It was intentionally unclear storytelling.
Yes.
And where I think these six episodes excelled, I liked her. I liked Vinder. I liked the Lupari.
Carvanista.
Although, the way he was introduced totally sucked, because he's like in the opening moments of this season and stuff, and I'm like, I can't make out this hologram and whatnot. So when we see him later, I'm like, wait, who's this?
He's hard to recognize in the opening. That scene is very hard to understand in terms of what's going on and why.
Well, it's utterly ludicrous.
Well, that too.
And you go through how, you know, the Doctor and Yaz are in kind of a death trap. Now, why they are, I don't know, but okay, they are. They escape it through some very literal gymnastics that make zero sense. And if it had taken Yaz another second to understand what the doctor was saying, she'd have been dead.
I'm pretty sure they flew around on broomsticks for a while.
Well, I was going to say, that's when we get into the Quidditch match portion of the escape.
Yeah.
And then they land in the TARDIS with a landing such that it's like, wait a sec, was this set up ahead of time?
Well, the TARDIS is adaptive.
Yeah, but the trampoline and the mattress to catch them in was kind of weird. And for this to kind of get referenced back at the end of, well, you know, this is why the doctor was going after all of this stuff. It just felt like they were trying to throw us into the middle of the action and hoping we'd catch up, which, you know, we eventually did. But there was a lot of, wait, what the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And I feel that this story could have been better told, instead of by Chris Chibnall, who wrote it, either by, well, certainly Russell T. Davies, who had originated this era of Doctor Who and will be the next showrunner, or Stephen Moffat.
Well, you had commented at one point, one of the episodes has a bunch of, like, flashing through people's time streams and memories.
Mm-hmm.
And you had commented at one point after we watched that episode, how differently the season would have played if that had been the first episode.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of, if they had started with the Doctor disoriented and having some memories she doesn't have from her own life thrown at her.
Well, it would have then been picking up on the threads of the lost child and the other Doctor we saw from previous season.
The timeless child.
The timeless child and the other female Doctor we'd gotten last season.
Yeah.
Whereas it took 3 episodes to get to that point?
That feels right.
At least 3, maybe 4. At which point, it's like, did you just ignore where you left off last season? It felt jarring. I certainly think Moffat or Davies could have told this sort of a story way better. And I'm wondering if this could have been remastered just by flipping the order of things and made it more sensible.
I got confused on the logic they were using.
I think the confusion is, was there logic they were using?
And that may be it. Because there were times... Okay, we go back to the Crimea and the war there.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't even come up with what time period we're in. But we're at the time of Florence Nightingale. And the Santarans are there. And people are saying, what do you mean we should be fighting the Russians? We're fighting the Santarans.
Yeah, because apparently Santarans are launching a cross-time invasion of Earth for some reason. And I was never quite clear why.
But then we go to 1967, and they don't know about the Santarans fighting for Earth.
Yeah, and I couldn't tell if the events of the Crimean War just hadn't caught up to them or what was going on. This writer's take on the way time travel works in Doctor Who seems to be at odds with how certainly Russell T. Davies seemed to treat it, even how Stephen Moffat had treated it and such. And when we're simultaneously operating in multiple time frames, and we've got one period at one point in the story where there's like a barrier of time and people from 1901 can see people in 1967 or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is odd.
Yeah. Well, but there are other times when that same barrier, effectively, is you're seeing, like, stars because this community is being ripped out of time.
And that was a plot thread that just seemed to kind of get dropped at one point.
Yeah.
And there were a number of those where it's like, okay, we're done with this, so we're done with this.
Yeah.
And in a not overly satisfying way.
Yeah, well, and to a degree, I would say UNIT got treated that way. We feel like we should tell you some history of UNIT, what happened with UNIT in this version, but then we're only going to give you one character from UNIT who seems to be active, but isn't going to refer to anyone else from UNIT or that UNIT is on the case.
She did refer to Osgood once, but the whole bit with UNIT to get that kind of, because it was Kate Stewart that we see present day, and her, I guess, father or grandfather in his early days, and that was a character from the early Doctor Who stuff. But he's never called out by name, I believe. So either you kind of guess who he is or you don't. This is all setting up the Grand Serpent or whatever his name was. the alien who, again, is he bouncing through time? Is he not? What's going on? And there's a lot of things where, while the scenes may be good, may play well, in some cases they do, some cases not so much, I never really cared for the Grand Serpent character. Because, again, never got his motivation, what his grand plan was, etc.
I never got why he came to Earth.
Yeah, the plot falls flat even if the episode is entertaining and the scenes are good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the plot was complete crap. It had its moments.
Yeah.
But some of them felt, again, when we're introduced to, I guess it was Claire, who, oh, you haven't met me yet.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like what happened with Sally or whomever in Blink when we first meet the Weeping Angels. The bit with what happens with the Doctor in the final episode of the Six reminded me of some stuff they had done with the David Tennant Doctor at the end of one of his seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt they were trying to do, because that was when, I think it was, might have even been the end of his last full season, when they'd kind of pulled a lot of the previous companions in, and it was kind of a big crescendo of the action and stuff. It was beautifully done. It was a lot of fun. I felt they were trying to get that sense here, but it didn't quite work that way, because it's like, okay, we've got enough to go split into multiple teams. You guys go do this, I'll do this. And everything was just kind of bouncing around. I didn't feel there was a really cohesive plan. There were enough characters in play. I'm like, oh yeah, I'd forgotten that character was sent off to do a solo mission that we never really understood what was.
Yeah.
You know, and, oh, we're going back to this character that I'd totally lost track of, because it had so many things going on. And not in a, oh, they needed more time to do it, but in a, even if they had more episodes to do it in, they still, and probably even more so, should have cut down the number of plot lines they had going.
Yeah, that was my issue.
It was too much to keep track of, and it was not done in a way that they kept enough of it front of mind for me to, mm-hmm. to realize, oh yeah, that's where we're leaving off. Okay, you've set up this guy in 1820. He really doesn't become a big thing until episode 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm.
And this big long scene we get with him at the beginning of near episode 1, I'm like, why do we care?
Yeah.
And I think this was more grandiose of a plan than the execution fulfilled. And I don't think Chibnall's done a bad job helming Doctor Who, but let's face it, the competition with Moffat and Davies, those are pretty high bars.
Yeah. I really think, for me, the best character he dealt with was Jericho, the professor. I think there was one aspect, major downfall, if he could go back and add either a couple lines of dialogue or a scene, it would be kind of a, yeah, you need to do that for the DVD. Because this is a character who in 1965, Claire shows up from 2021, and he starts seeing her as a patient and doesn't believe she's time traveled and is, you know, kind of the, you're so convinced you were born in, what, 1982?
Mm-hmm.
And this, that, and the other. And he's running these tests on her and trying to help her live in the 60s and treat her and stuff. Now we fast forward to 1967, he's been helping her for 2 years, trying to help her adjust. And, you know, he has served in, what, World War II, based on what he says?
Yeah.
But he deals shockingly well with the Weeping Angels surrounding his house, with the Doctor showing up, with having to escape his home, with ending up in 1901, with Yaz and Dan, and the little girl, who's like 9 years old. And for me, it's with the little girl that's where they fell down.
I'd totally forgotten about her till you mentioned her, but yep.
Because we see them in 1901, and this is where you were saying there's that divide, and they can see the Doctor in 1967, but they can't walk across it. And the little girl sees her adult self.
Yep.
In 1967, and basically gets told, I remember being you, I remember being on the other side of the divide. They're in a town that is empty, except for the four of them. And then the next time we see them, Yaz, Dan, and Dr. Jericho are traveling the world trying to find clues on how to get back to the Doctor, and no mention of the 9-year-old.
No idea what happened to the 9-year-old. No idea how Yaz, Dan, and Jericho are affording this international travel they're doing, which they're doing at a fairly rapid pace based on where they are in the same year and such.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll give them a little slide on the bunny, because they had access to everything in a deserted town. Hate to say they looted it, but they had access to the silver in the homes, that kind of stuff. And they knew the people weren't coming back.
Yeah, but even so, transferring that into liquid money to be able to travel around the world, yet they still had cash things because Dan had to be the stowaway.
There was also a stock market at the time.
Again, a couple of lines of dialogue.
Yep, I agree.
I mean, this could have been a great thing for Dan. I'm a history buff.
Yeah, well, and Jericho had a line about the fact, and he's basically, you know, talking about, you know, Claire came to me and I didn't believe her. Now I'm living years before I was born.
Yep. Well, it's funny because I think when they were traveling the world and stuff, we started to get some really good interplay between Dan and Yaz.
Yes.
And I really think having Jericho in the mix was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I don't want to say almost as if he were the doctor, but he was filling that narrative role for them to a degree.
Well, for me, what was intriguing was he was clearly set up to be, in the when we met him, the "you think I'm locked in my ivory tower" mindset. And then as we deal with the Weeping Angels, it's, look, I've got more real world experience than you realize. I happen to like my ivory tower.
Yeah, yeah.
But I can handle the real world. And that's what we got more and more of.
Well, and again, he was a well-developed character.
Mm-hmm.
I liked him. I liked Dan.
Yeah, so did I.
I liked Vinder. I liked Belle.
You.
I liked, again, the dog.
Carvanista.
Carvanista. Can't remember his name, but I like him.
Well, okay, two things on Carvanista. First of all, for most of the season, I thought his name was Calvinista until we saw it written somewhere.
Mm.
Secondly, this is sort of a two-part secondly. I think because they left Belle, Vinder, and Carvanista on a ship together, I think they'd make a fun spinoff series.
If they don't do a comic book miniseries over at Titan Comics with them, they've missed an opportunity. Or a novel. Or one of the audio things they do from whichever Big Finish Audio, I think it is.
Now, if they do something for the screen again, all I ask is that they work on Carvanista's costume, his head.
Yeah, he's full dog set up on the head, and it hides the expressiveness of the actor.
It hides that, and there are a lot of scenes, they're dark enough, and all of the fur around the eyes is so bushy that often you can only see one eye.
There was an episode they did in the David Tennant years with the traffic jam or whatever, and we're mainly sitting on the...
Oh, yes! Yeah.
Didn't they have a dog-like guy there?
Oh, I'd have to think.
And I thought his makeup was much better done.
This looked more like, I almost want to say, a helmet put over the actor as opposed to prosthetics put onto the actor.
And very well may have been, just for, you know, logistics reasons and stuff. It looked good, it just wasn't expressive.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why one eye constantly being lost in shadow or looking closed was disconcerting to me.
There were a couple of times, it's like, I know you're on a spaceship, but light bulbs, guys.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, but yeah, I liked the three of those characters, and I thought, you know, they'd be fun off on their own ship adventures.
There have been a number of times where it's like, I want to see where that character goes next.
Yeah.
Or at least at some point in the future. And those three certainly qualify.
Well, and when you think about it, those three are in a very entertaining position in terms of they are three people on one ship that can remote pilot and control 7 billion other ships.
Or at least what's left of the fleet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot they could do with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd love to see those characters come back. The Doctor's daughter is another one I'd like to see come back. And then Clara, and who did she hang with at the end there? She'd gone off in her own TARDIS with...
Oh, that's right.
The one from Game of Thrones. The actress whose name I'm forgetting. But I mean, again, there's a couple of things where it's like there had to be a story to tell after this.
Yeah.
And again, 6 episodes with so much going on, for so many of these characters to come out so well-formed that it's like, yeah, I want to follow them more. that does say something very positive about the writing.
Yeah.
But this is one where I think Chibnall would be better as the writer, scripter versus the plotter, architect, showrunner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's done a few episodes prior to all of this, one or two during the Russell T. Davies era, and then also during the Stephen Moffat era. I don't remember off the top of my head which episodes those were.
Interesting.
But this is one where, in the course of these six episodes, pulling in the Weeping Angels, the Daleks, the Cybermen, introducing a couple of new threats and races,
mm-hmm.
bouncing between 4, 5, or 6, or 7 time frames, it was a lot to keep track of.
It really was. And, I mean, they said they wanted to do a big, grand, gigantic story. But I think there's a way to do it that makes it such that, I don't want to say it's easier to follow, but it's easier to stay on board for the ride as opposed to coming out of the first episode saying, I'm lost.
Yeah, I think the scope of the story they were telling, where the end of the universe is at stake or whatever, is fine, is good, is grand. But having just the number of plot threads and the gap between, because you have so many, there's going to be an inherent gap between when you address it, circle through the others, and get back to it.
I don't think we needed Williamson with the scene about digging the tunnels in the first episode. I think actually seeing a guy from the 1820s wandering around bumping into people with the what the heck, I must be imagining things a couple times before we get the wait, who are you?
Well, what I would have been tempted to do, Dan's at the museum giving the lecture or whatever. Have him give the lecture on this guy. Intercut it with this guy. And then we start seeing this guy in places he could not possibly be.
Yeah.
And you could even deal with some of that of, well, there have been stories of people seeing him for years after.
Mm-hmm.
And set him up and stuff. But the question is, do you need to do that in episode one if we're not going to deal with him until later? And it felt like he was there as a plot device to give us passageways through time. And it felt like he was needed for the story, but I didn't feel he was satisfying in the story.
Well, we needed the location. Did we need him? We didn't.
Probably not.
We didn't need a person for us to find Atropos and the temple.
Yeah, and him being in the temple didn't do a whole lot of good. The whole scenes in the temple were ones that, while pivotal to the story, were almost forgettable at times in the story. You know, and then to use that as a way to explore the Doctor's past and then get to another fob watch, which again is a callback to a David Tennant era episode, which in that episode it made sense. Here, it didn't. And then for the Doctor to finally get, you know, oh, here's all of her memories of the past, and then just kind of tuck it away for safekeeping after going to all this trouble to get it, it's like, what happened there?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because there were a couple of times, like with the Ood in the Division suddenly helping her out, whereas before it's like, nope, can't do it.
He started helping her when she pointed out that all of his fellow Ood were inside the universe that was being crushed.
I thought it was a little bit after that, and I didn't feel it was one leading to the other, but I may need to rewatch. And having the Ood there just felt, I almost will say, gratuitous.
Mm.
It could have been anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And for the Division to basically boil down to the Ood and the one lady.
Mm-hmm. I chalked that part up to COVID, frankly. I mean, it was a pandemic filming. It's the same reason why I chalked up when we went into the Doctor's time stream, instead of remembering the people who actually served with her when she was that Doctor. She was seeing Dan, Vender, and Yaz.
I took that as something they would have done anyways.
Mm.
Both to save on the casting, but also to, you know, these are her friends. This is what she sees them based on her mindset. She's superimposing familiar faces.
Mm-hmm.
So, but again, it could be read either way and stuff.
I think if it hadn't been the pandemic, I almost want to say glitches to throw them out of the memories would have been smaller. Because like when Vender was in his memories, it was Yaz instead of the right commanding officer, or Yaz instead of the right peer. But I think that the difference that would have thrown him out of the memory would have been smaller.
I think we would have seen the other guy, and then it would glitch the other way than it did. Yeah, it's hard to say. Again, I liked some of what they were trying to do. There were some aspects of the plot, just in general, that I would have simplified and streamlined to make it easier to follow.
I guess for me, it came down to there were 8 or 9 threads and only 6 episodes. That's asking a lot of my brain.
Well, and again, out of the 9 or however many we counted, we didn't really touch that much on the whole bit with the temple. We didn't really touch on the division. We didn't touch on...
Those weren't in the first episode.
The Grand Serpent or whatever his name was.
Not in the first episode.
But that's my point.
I'm saying I only counted 9 from the first
episode. Absolutely. Yeah. But they introduced even more.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot to kind of keep track of beyond just the too many they had in the first.
Yeah.
That it doesn't, maybe on a rewatch, it would hold better because I kind of have a little bit of the lay of the land and stuff.
I think so.
But I'm not convinced.
I'm glad that we saved it up and binged it.
Yeah.
I can see why people who are watching it on a weekly basis found it to be a challenge.
I think I'd have been totally stumped watching it on a weekly basis. You know, I like this doctor. I like these companions. I'd have been okay if Vinder and Bell and,
Carvanista.
Carvanista. If the dog had stuck around, I hope we see them again later in the season. If not, I think that's a waste.
Yeah, me too.
I'm curious where they're going to go, both with, I guess, I think they've got a New Year's special and another arc after that. I just don't know. I'm really curious where everything lands and what Russell T. Davies is going to have to work with after that.
Mm.
Because when I heard, because I knew like J. Michael Straczynski was like, hey, I'd be interested. And it's like, oh, they're talking to other people and stuff and they probably want a Brit. Yeah. But when I found out it was Russell T. Davies, I'm like, well, wow, that's awesome. He did a brilliant job with it before. But I'm also thinking, he did a brilliant job with it before. Can he live up to that?
Mm-hmm.
Times have changed. He's changed. We've changed, etc. And I think he can. But I've got to imagine you don't sign up for that job knowing exactly what all it entails, having not only done Doctor Who before, but spinning up Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures. I mean, mm-hmm. He was, again, doing the universe building before it was the thing to do. I'm really excited about where he may take things, and I've got to imagine he's got a game plan. It's just a question of how well does this season go over, and I've not heard glowing things about it,
mm-hmm.
and where things are at for him to kind of go with moving forward.
Yeah.
Because I've got to wonder if Vinder and Bell were one of those where it's like, oh, maybe they could get spun off to their own series or something. And certainly if the BBC has the wherewithal to do more shows and stuff based on these things, there's the material there to be had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to see that if they could do it well.
Yeah, me too. When I think the show is better binged than parceled out mm-hmm. weekly. So I think our binging it gave us the better viewing experience.
Well, when I knew it was going to be a 6-episode arc, it's like, yeah, let's just save it up. A lot of the recent seasons have been very episodic,
mm-hmm.
so it was easy to do one by one. Some of the earlier ones with Tennant and stuff, it'd be like 2-parters and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And often at that point, I'd hang on to the first, watch them back to back.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I definitely binging this was the way to go.
I think it took me 4 episodes to really understand, okay, here's what's going on and I'm on board. So I think it's easy to give up on the show this season during the first 2 or 3 episodes.
This is not the season to introduce somebody to Doctor Who with.
No, I don't think so. No.
This is the type that if you're on the fence as do I stay with it or not, could easily bump somebody off.
Yeah. And it's a shame going back to the, I really enjoyed some of these characters.
Some of these characters, I think the actors did a terrific job.
Mm-hmm.
It's just plot-wise, it's a little off-putting at times. As entertaining as it may be.
Well, and the sad thing is, I think Yaz got the short end of the stick as a result of these other characters getting so fleshed out. It's kind of, we fleshed out Yaz previously, so she's our tried and true.
Yeah, she did not get much character development this season. Not at all. And even though I like Dan, I'm not going to say he was crazy well-defined.
But he was fun to watch.
Yes.
And he stepped up in unexpected ways and in fun ways.
Yeah. If they go universe building in the Russell T. Davies era, and I, again, got to imagine they will, I would love to see a series that is the companion support group.
Oh, yeah. That'd be hilarious.
We get Dan for a little bit, and he's hanging out with, you know, Mickey, or it'd be a little hard to pull Donna in, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Just kind of a rotating, some of these other former companions have networked.
Mm-hmm.
And they're holding down the fort while the Doctor's busy with bigger things. Kind of, that would be an interesting take on, like, the Sarah Jane adventure stuff. And I'd pull in some of those characters, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.